So welcome back to the Birdie Bug Pod.
Episode 42.
Seems like ages.
It has been a while.
Has it been a while?
I feel like we've said that a few times. It's been a year of a lot of weddings.
Yeah, actually, 2024 has been bonkers, hasn't
it? Yeah, we've had a lot of weddings, and last week was my older brother's, and something happened the week before, and I can't remember what that was, but
it was a banging wedding, though, wasn't it?
It was a cracking wedding. But we are now finally back.
We are back, and it's good to be back, because we love it, and we've missed it, so we're back.
Indeed. And before we do the catch-up, we'll introduce the topic, because I'm excited about it. It was one that I think I proposed.
Yes, you did.
We're doing an episode all about pigeons.
The much maligned pigeon.
Yeah, and it's interesting, because it's not a typical episode where we're looking at a species that's undergone a huge population decline and then some successful conservation. The wood pigeons and feral pigeons are certainly not in decline. It is more just a, like you say, a maligned species that we want to shed some light on, because they're actually pretty cool.
We're going to show some pigeon love, aren't we?
Yeah, they actually have quite a range of abilities that I think people may not know about, and really they deserve more respect.
They definitely, and you will find out why, they definitely deserve more respect, because they have been part of our lives for many, many years.
Yeah, so the whole rat with wings, we're dispelling with
that. I hate that.
To be fair, golds get that as well, don't they?
Like, yeah, I really hate that label that they've got.
I think it's just because they're in the urban environment.
Yeah, I know, but the thing is, a bit like with gulls, they're in that urban environment, and they've been enticed into that urban environment by us, feeding them.
We did also sort of stick an urban environment on their habitats.
Yeah, I know, but we then fed them.
Yeah.
And then we brought them in by feeding them more, and then we called them rats with wings, which I think is just a terrible thing. Yeah.
So
I don't like that.
It's a whole episode on why pigeons are pretty damn cool.
Yeah.
Very quickly then, before we delve into that, catch up.
Yeah, I haven't got a lot of catch up. I did have a lovely hour or two photographing great white egrets, which I don't see very often, but they've got a couple at the wetland centre in Arundel, one of my little haunts that I go to when I'm skiving off work.
A lot of time there.
And it was great to see them. Quite unusual, actually, because they've got a couple there that in October are sort of in breeding colours, which is a bit odd. Great white egrets, as they're in their full breeding colours, get this limey green colour around their eyes and bill, which is it was quite something to see, and I don't know why they're in breeding colours in October. But
if you'd like to see it, just head over to A Bird
Lens. You can see those on A Bird in the Lens Instagram page. There's a few on there. Anyway, so that's about all, but that was lovely.
I mean, I don't have a lot. The last month or so has been so busy with work, weddings, and more work. But I finally yesterday got back out my camera and was very pleased to find that even in early October, I was able to find some good spiders, shield bug, some cool flies, so that the insects and critters that I like to photograph haven't quite disappeared yet. So I was pleased to be able to squeeze a bit of
yes, and you can actually see thing. That shield bug.
I haven't published it yet. When this episode goes out,
you'd put it up on your Instagram page. Okay.
By the time this goes out, you can head over to A Bug in the Lens and see shield bug.
I was trying to do a good plug for that. You've also been flying all over the place with the Rivers Trust.
Yeah, I have been up to York, and I did spend an afternoon in a river pulling bikes and stuff out, which was really good fun as well.
Right,
I might have mentioned that in the previous episode, the timeline for September.
It was bikes and shopping trolleys, isn't
it? Oh, we found three shopping trolleys.
Why do people put shopping trolleys in rivers?
I don't know.
What is that about?
I don't know, but they're basically part of the wildlife at this, this stage.
I've never understood that.
It was quite
you push
handy.
A shopping trolley along, I'll just chuck it in the river.
It was quite handy.
Why did you do that?
We put the three big bin bags that we got in the shopping trolley and then wheeled it back to the car.
Well, at least it was useful for something.
But anyway, I have been in rivers too, which was nice.
We better crack on with pigeons.
Yeah, because we found quite a lot.
It's good
pigeons.
Stuff, actually. So you want to crack on? You want to
I'll kick it off. I will say, I mean, obviously, everyone listening to this episode has, of course, already listened to our turtle dove episode.
Of course they have.
Which did have a little bit of an introduction, so it might be a small repeat for those of you who haven't made it to the turtle dove episode yet. But essentially, I thought I'd start with, what is a pigeon?
Yeah.
And so typically it's just birds belonging to the family Columbidae, which I think is how you say it.
Contains... I never know whether D-A-E is day or D.
It's typically Columbidae.
Columbidae.
I think.
I'll take your word for it.
Which is a family that contains 344 species divided into 50 different genuses or genera, depending on how you want to say that. And so when people think of pigeons in the UK, I think it's normally the wood pigeon, which is our most abundant pigeon, or in the urban areas it's normally like the feral pigeons, but there are actually 344 different
coloured
pigeons
and doves, of course.
Yeah, so that was the other thing. I obviously mentioned this in the turtle dove episode. The distinction between pigeons and doves isn't really a real thing. Typically in English we call the small species doves and the large species pigeons, but there isn't really a scientific separation between those two
categories. And they actually all originate from the rock dove,
or the rock pigeon, which is
Columba livia.
So like I say, we have things like the collared dove and turtle doves, but scientifically, like genetically, they are still pigeons. They, as a group of birds, are very abundant worldwide, every continent except Antarctica, and pretty much are only absent from a few very remote islands and some of the really cold regions in the Arctic. But they are obviously incredibly abundant. And whilst the ones that we have in the UK, apart from the turtle dove, are not typically endangered, it's important to note that 59 different pigeon species are listed as threatened worldwide, and 13 have already gone extinct, including the dodo, which was just a very large pigeon.
Yeah, which was interesting because I didn't realise
that. Yeah, so it's not to say that we're sitting here talking about an animal that's all over the place. They're probably one of the most commonly seen creature in the UK, but there are still pigeon and dove species out there that are struggling. It's just not the topic for today. Do you know what the collective noun for pigeons is?
You caught me on that. Because I quite like collective nouns of birds, and I don't.
I struggled with it in the sense that typically it's a flock of pigeons.
Yeah.
But a flock is, people use that for lots of birds. And then I found loads of different ones, but the one that came up most is a dropping of pigeons.
Oh, really?
Which I can sort of see why they got that one. But the other one I liked was a loft of pigeons.
Oh, okay. That
which
makes
I thought
sense.
Was
yeah.
quite cool. But there were quite a few.
Yeah.
A few other sort of notable things is they are actually monogamous animals.
Yeah.
So they do mate for life.
Yeah.
And amazingly, even if one of the pigeons dies, apparently it will take quite a long time before the surviving one will accept a new mate. So they're quite
quite loyal.
Yeah, loyal birds. And they actually share a lot of the sort of parental responsibilities, where normally the female will incubate eggs overnight whilst the male will incubate during the day. So they sort of take care. They're also really quite protective of their nests, which obviously is true for a lot of animals, but it makes me laugh mainly because pigeon nests are really quite flimsy and lackluster. They look like they shouldn't even really contain an egg. They don't put a huge amount of effort into their nests, but they will defend them fiercely. And then I've got little things like in captivity, they can live up to 15 years, but normally, your urban pigeon will live sort of 3 to 4. Do you know what the 5 common pigeon species are in the UK? Because I didn't know that we had 5, but then when I looked at the names, I was like, I should have.
Well, it would be wood pigeon, collared dove, turtle dove, feral pigeon.
Yep, and then you're missing one, which is the one that I was missing.
And it's not the rock dove, because I don't think the rock dove is a...
Well, the rock dove and feral pigeon are sort of the...
Well, I was going to sort... Yeah, well, we'll go on to that in a minute. What's the other one? No, I can't.
Stock dove.
Ah,
the stock dove.
I don't know much about a stock dove.
No, I didn't. And I mean, the wood pigeon is our most common. We've got 5 million breeding pairs of wood pigeons.
Yeah.
And then the feral pigeon, which is your more urban creature, we've got about 400,000.
It's interesting.
000.
It's interesting why that word feral pigeon, that's quite interesting, isn't it? Because they all the pigeons originate from rock doves.
Yeah.
And because, which we will go on to again, the pigeons were one of the first birds to be domesticated.
Yeah.
They then, those domesticated birds over time, then escaped and then went back and bred with the wild rock doves. And of course they then, you know, not mutated, that's not the right word.
They sort of interbred. To the point of being one population.
And, yeah, exactly. So, and this is why on with the feral pigeons, you see an awful lot of different plumages in the birds and the different colours.
Yeah, so I mean, in the UK, the pure wild rock dove is quite rare.
Yeah.
And you only really find quite small populations in like the Outer Hebrides.
Yeah.
Whereas the feral pigeons are everywhere. In all of that. And like you said, they can go from pure white to whole, completely black to everything in between. They are really quite diverse because of all that interbreeding with the wild. I've got a few little cool like biology facts about pigeons, one being their unique ability to drink. So pretty much all birds, when you watch them, if you've got a bird bath, they'll take a sip and then throw their head back in the air to try and swallow the water. And so they sort of have to tilt their head and let the water run down their throat, whereas pigeons are actually able to suck water up directly,
yeah,
pretty much like we would through a straw,
yeah,
which is an adaptation that lets them drink really quickly and efficiently. And people think that's quite useful in things like arid environments where water is quite scarce. You want to really slurp it up when there's high competition for the water. So I had no idea that was something pigeons were able to do. And then the thing I liked learning about was that I had to discover why pigeons bob their head when they walk.
Yeah, that's interesting, because so I'm glad you found that out.
It's quite an iconic,
yeah,
movement. And
they're not the only birds that do it, but
no. Apparently it's so that they can essentially stabilize the image of the environment. So when you slow it down, they're not bobbing their head. Their head moves first and then their body catches up. So they move their head forward and then the body follows. And essentially what that does is it gives the eyes enough time, apparently it's about 20 milliseconds, to build a steady scene of the world. And how they discovered this is in the 1970s. I love this. I mean, it's not very nice, but it's interesting. Some researchers put pigeons on a treadmill with a clear box over them so they couldn't fly away, and found that when they're walking on a treadmill but their environment is stationary, they don't bob their heads. So if you put them on a treadmill where they're moving but the environment isn't, they don't need to move their heads, apparently.
Wow, that's so interesting.
So essentially, as they move their heads, their eyes lock in place and body catches up. And then the head moves forward again, locks onto something new, and the pigeon keeps moving forward. And it just stabilizes the environment to keep a nice,
wow,
steady
that's a great fact.
I had no idea that that was a thing.
Yeah.
I just assumed lots of birds sort of bob their heads, but apparently that's why.
I found it really interesting also about this crop milk, as they call it.
Oh, yeah, we did this in the turtle dove,
pigeon milk, which it's not milk, but it's a production of a substance in their crop that I think is generated from a hormone protein.
Yeah, it's really nutrients.
And it's high in nutrients. It's one of the reasons why you don't often see young pigeons, because they actually grow really quickly.
Yeah.
So, and both parents produce this crop milk, as it's called, and it's incredibly nutritious, so they grow really fast. And pigeons also are able to fledge at least 6 broods in a season, because they're
young,
fledging them,
yeah,
really quickly. So probably another reason why their populations are, you know,
rapidly, yeah,
yeah, are quite stable.
Yeah, I did delve into pigeon milk in the turtle dove episodes. If you want more information,
it's incredibly nutritious, almost as nutritious as you know,
milk
from,
yeah,
mammals.
Because
so,
I think the only other birds that do it are flamingos.
Oh, okay.
Right, I feel like this is probably the appropriate time. Would you like a pigeon quiz?
No, but yes, of course I would.
Thought it was a fun way to present some information. So, question one.
Yeah.
What is the largest species of pigeon?
Wood pigeon.
I don't mean in the UK, I mean worldwide.
Oh, I see.
So I should mention, this episode is very much focusing on our UK pigeons and, you know, the domesticated, the homing pigeons. But these facts are like worldwide, whole family.
And there are 350...
Yeah.
Species.
Yeah. So what is the largest pigeon?
I don't know.
It's the crowned pigeon of New Guinea, which is nearly turkey-sized and weighs,
wow,
up to 2 to 4 kilograms.
Are you kidding me?
Which is,
that's a big pigeon, isn't
which
it?
I think in this day and age when we're lacking dodos, I sort of want to go and see a crowned,
yeah, see,
pigeon.
I didn't know that dodo was in part,
no,
of the pigeon family.
So on the flip side of that, What is the smallest species of pigeon?
Oh, I don't know.
Is the common ground dove, which is about the same size as a house sparrow.
I really wished I'd researched this a bit
more. Tiny little house sparrow-sized pigeon.
And where's that?
You get them in the States.
Okay.
So that's 22 grams. So if you're looking at the range of pigeons, yeah, you're going from about 20 grams up to potentially 4 kilos.
Yeah.
Right, this one's multiple choice, so you've got a chance.
Go on in.
So this is, what is the fear of pigeons called?
Oh, I like that question.
So A, I'm going to butcher these words, peristophobia.
Yeah.
B, anthropophobia.
Yeah.
C, ophidiophobia. Or D, tachophobia. The question is, can you remember what I just said?
I think it might be the third one.
Ophidiophobia. Yeah. No, that is the fear of snakes.
Oh, is it?
It's actually peristerophobia.
Right.
P-E-R-I-S-T-E-R-O.
I'm not doing very well in the quiz, am I?
I mean, they're all a bit harsh. The other one, anthropophobia, was a fear of flowers.
Yeah.
And tachophobia is the fear of speed.
Oh, okay.
So
I suppose that makes sense, yeah.
Right, this is another one.
Go on then.
Only two more questions. How much do you think the most expensive pigeon in the world sold for?
I know that answer to that question. It was $1.9 million.
It was. A Belgian racing pigeon named New Kim sold in an auction for $1.9 million.
Question right.
All right, last one. This is a multiple choice.
Go on then.
But there are three answers.
Go on.
What is a baby pigeon called?
A squab.
Squab, squeakers, or peeps? Which I think is just great.
Peeps.
Peeps. But squabs is squab, the standard
squab
one.
Pigeon, yeah.
There you go. That's 2 out of 5.
Yeah, it's not too bad,
considering it was very rogue. Also, the largest and smallest species
were quite harsh. Okay.
Right. Well, just before we move into, I think, slightly more of your side of stuff, the historical, the cultural significance of pigeons and the roles they've played, and then we'll also touch on things like their intelligence and some incredible capabilities. I just found this, which I thought was really interesting, that so pigeons have actually been quite common pets throughout life. Obviously, when we think of pet pigeons, I assume people will maybe think more of like breeding racing pigeons, homing pigeons, messenger pigeons, that sort of thing. But throughout history, they were, in general, quite a common pet. And one of the reasons people think this is that people have watched pigeons and realised that a lot of their behaviour actually mimics that type of behaviours that we really hold in high esteem when we see it in people. So the monogamy, you know, they're really care for one another, they care for their offspring, they've got real strong homing instincts, so they always want to come home. They're fiercely protective of their nest and their young, but they're also incredibly gentle, peaceful creatures with high intelligence. And so people sort of viewed them as, actually, they have a lot of the characteristics that we would value in people. They're really based around their home, protective of their young, really intelligent, but are also very gentle and peaceful. And so people think one of the reasons why we've got such a tight association with them is that really they are a good creature to aspire to be like. And I thought that was really nice.
Actually, people think they're dirty creatures as well, and they're really not. They're very clean birds, actually. They're very clean animals.
The sentence I liked was, largely peaceful creatures, highly intelligent, but living what humans saw as a simple and ideal life. And I thought, well, you should all live the pigeon lifestyle.
Yeah. Pigeon love, that's what we want.
Right, do you want to delve into a bit of the history? Because there's a lot of pigeon history.
Yeah, there is
history.
A lot. And they think that pigeons may have been the very first domesticated bird. Pigeons have been portrayed in Mesopotamian art as far back as 4,500 BC. They were obviously, what I mentioned before, they were a significant food source for thousands of years until we discovered chickens, and then chicken became the avian choice.
I did see that chickens obviously came from the red jungle fowl, which is the wild chicken, which was mainly a food source in India and Asia, but pigeons were the food source in sort of Middle East and Europe.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a division, really, which I had no idea.
I think for me, when I was doing the research, the thing, I mean, we all know that, I'm sure everybody knows that pigeons have got this homing instinct. Lots of birds have a homing instinct and come, you know, every year will migrate to thousands of miles and then come back to the same places every year. But pigeons in particular have got this incredible homing ability. So we've used them as messengers. Let's call them that. We've used them as messengers for thousands of years. And I discovered some fantastic things about that, which I never knew at all. Even going back to the Olympic Games, the very first Olympic Games, which was 776 BC, the competitors used homing pigeons. If they won an event, they would use pigeons to send messages to their families to tell them that they won an event. So they were carriers of Olympic results.
Basically BBC Sport here.
They were basically, exactly, they were basically the sports results that they would be sending backwards and forwards, which I thought was absolutely amazing.
Because apparently that started a tradition to release doves at the Olympic opening ceremony, which they don't do anymore, but I mean, for a while they did.
Yeah, absolutely. But also, Julius Caesar used messenger pigeons, homing pigeons, to send messages to his armies across, you know, when he was rampaging across the world, setting up the Roman Empire. Not just Julius Caesar, but all of the Roman Empire emperors used messenger pigeons for that purpose, which I thought was also incredible. I loved the Olympic Game results, and for betting as well. For betting, syndicates used them. Ships used them back in the Roman times, warning their home port of their imminent arrival. Well,
I guess actually it's probably a good way of doing it overseas.
They've been
isn't it?
Used for communication for thousands of years, and
I still find it baffling. Like,
I think it's incredible, if you've got
an empire and you've got generals that are moving around, you know, conquering lands, how does that pigeon know which dude to go and find? Yeah.
It is incredible. But that sentence here, at one time, pigeons made up the largest system of communication in the world.
Yeah, sit down, Elon. We don't need Skylink or whatever it's called, just pigeons.
In the 1800s, the Rothschild family, Rothschild obviously being a huge in finance, were one of the wealthiest families in the world, used their network of pigeon lofts to communicate about finances. Pigeons were much faster than other available forms of communication, and they'd give the family an advantage, helping them to expand their fortune. So they would be sending information about finances, about stocks to sell and buy, and incredible. But I guess the other thing that I discovered, which I think will change everybody's view on pigeons, was how many lives historically they have saved in wartime.
They're heroes, really, aren't they?
They are absolute heroes. And again, I didn't realise that, like, we have a Victoria Cross medal for extreme things of bravery in wartime, animals do as well. It's called the Dickens Medal. And it's given, Dickens medals are given out to not just to pigeons, but to animals that have shown amazing feats of bravery in wartime. And of course, we've used animals a lot. We used horses in World War One. We've used dogs as messengers as well, and all sorts. So we've used animals in wartime.
Probably
sadly. Yeah. And many died, the same as people did. But so they gave a Dickens medal out for bravery in wartime. And out of the 52 Dickens medals that have ever been awarded to animals, 32 were awarded to pigeons. And there were some incredible stories going back to certainly the World War One. Again, I didn't realise every aeroplane, in every RAF plane, carried a pigeon. Every tank in the World War One battles carried a pigeon for conveying messages to how battles were going, whether they were needed support, whether to stop friendly fire. Often pigeons were used to send a message back saying, can you just get them to stop blasting us? You're actually, you know, firing at us. All sorts of things like that. But there's some amazing stories of pigeons being sent off from planes that have had to ditch in the sea, and they've sent the pigeons off to give them the the location of where they are so they could come and be rescued. I could honestly tell you loads of birds. There was one called Cher Ami.
Oh, he's the one. Well, that's the one that I found, because he took a bullet in the chest.
Yeah, delivered 12 important messages to the US military during World War One. On his last mission, he was shot in the breast and still managed to fly for another 25 minutes, completing his mission and saving the lives of 194 stranded soldiers.
Yeah, because he didn't actually die off that, because he retired.
Yeah, he retired. He was an absolute hero.
Which is just, it really is quite incredible.
So there was another one called White Vision, delivering a message under exceptionally difficult conditions, rescuing an aircrew while serving the RAF in October 1943. It was a flying boat that had to ditch in the Hebrides. Sea rescue operations were hindered by very bad weather. Air search was impossible because of a thick mist. But White Vision arrived back at her loft with a message giving the position of the ditched aircraft, and as a result, the search was resumed and they were sighted and the crew were saved. But it turns out the White Vision had flown 60 miles over heavy seas against a headwind of 25 miles an hour, visibility only 100 yards at the place of release and 300 yards at the place of arrival, and got back to her loft in the most unbelievable conditions and saved lives. There's so many.
Which actually, that's probably a really good point just to throw in a random bit of information about how good of a flyer pigeons actually are, because on average, they're capable of flying up to 600 miles every single day. And I think when you look at the size of them, you don't necessarily picture them as a rapid animal.
Yeah.
But they're one of our fastest birds. And whilst they average sort of 50 to 75 miles an hour, which in itself is quite rapid, they've been clocked going 80 to 90. And the record is actually held by a racing pigeon. So I guess that's, these are bred specifically for speed rather than a wild pigeon. Yeah. But the record is 110 miles an hour by a racing pigeon. So biologically, they are capable of huge speeds. And even the average of hitting 75 miles an hour, they are fast birds. So the fact that it's them battling headwinds and stuff is, if you're going to have a bird that's going to traverse those sorts of conditions, pigeons are a fantastic contender for some of the best flyers on the planet, I think.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I say I could spend an hour telling you all of these different incredible stories of pigeons in both world wars saving lives. There were other fascinating things, because homing pigeons actually are effectively only able to deliver a message one way. So they would fly off and then they would fly, back to their loft. So in World War II, we actually parachuted boxes of pigeons into France. So what would happen? We would literally put them in little containers and we'd parachute them behind the lines, and then the French resistance would put messages on those pigeons.
And take them home.
And send them back.
Yeah.
To send them back to us, to let us know exactly what was going on with position of the enemy and battles. But it was an incredibly dangerous thing to do. A lot of pigeons didn't make it.
Yeah, I mean, we should probably say,
hundreds of thousands didn't make it.
Given and been mentioned in previous episodes, as far as the use of animals and exploitation of animals, certainly not something we're for. And pleased to say that it's not something we do with pigeons so much, although I will go into it nowadays. It's fascinating to see what they were capable of and how their natural abilities of flight and homing and navigation were able to be used in such dramatic circumstances. Not saying it's great that thousands of them were shot out the sky, and certainly not something that we'd advocate for, but still fascinating to see how good their navigation was, how fantastic they were as a messenger system.
Yes, I didn't appreciate just at what level they were used as messengers.
Or how important they really were.
In 1800s, there was an official pigeon postal service throughout the whole of France. And lots of countries did the same. I didn't appreciate at what level.
No, I think it just shows
they were used as a communication source.
And therefore, because of how important communication is just for human societies, how much of an impact they've had on our development, culture and behaviour. So regardless of the ethical side of their use, you can't deny the impact they've had on our society or how close of a relationship humans and pigeons have had throughout history.
I mean, in the Cold War, in the 50s and 60s, when there was all this spying going on between, America and Russia and the rest of Europe, pigeons were sent off with spy cameras attached to their chests, and they would fly really low.
The day before drones, wasn't it?
So, exactly. So I really, really didn't appreciate just how widespread and how long term we've been using pigeons in that way.
Obviously, you mentioned the empire, Mesopotamian.
Yeah.
But then also there were references to pigeons in the Egyptian hieroglyphics and things like that. So obviously, the Egyptian empire is one of the longest standing, or one of the empires that had the longest run And yet they were relying on pigeons as well. So even back then, it's just...
I mean, it is. I could do a whole episode just on
wartime their, pigeons.
Yeah, I really could. It was...
I mean, we'll leave lots of links down so fascinating. People can go find these stories.
There's some fascinating stories. I mean, if we're going to go on to sort of a slightly different thing about their intelligence as well. Do you want to go on to that?
Yeah, because I've got quite a lot about their intelligence.
The one big thing here, one of the biggest indicators of animal intelligence is their ability to recognise themselves in a mirror.
Yeah.
Pigeons are one of the very, very few animals that can do that.
Especially when you typically think of the animals that recognise themselves and pass the mirror test. It's elephants and primates and I think dolphins. It's normally the highly intelligent mammals. So for a bird to be able to do it is extraordinary. And I think this section, I think, is important because, again, they have a real reputation for being quite thick.
Yes, and they're really not.
Pigeons have that idea of, they've got a bird brain, they're not very smart, bad memory. And they have a real undeserved reputation for being stupid. And we could have done an entire episode on the history of wartime pigeons, could have done a whole episode on their intelligence, and I had to dial it back and go quite broad on a few examples because otherwise I would have been here all day, because they are really quite remarkably smart birds. We've mentioned the ability to recognize themselves, but they can also differentiate between people, so they can recognize the faces of people, which is apparently quite rare. And it's not only the way they can tell faces is if the people change their clothes and come in differently, they'll still differentiate between people. But they can also understand the significance of that person in relation to themselves as a pigeon, whether that person is a source of food, a friend, a companion, or a threat. So they will remember, you know, if you've been kind and fed them a lot, or if a researcher has been unkind, and they will react accordingly. And those sort of characteristics or the association they have with those people will last for quite a long time. So even if those people go away and then come back after a fair period, they will still remember, you know, who were their friends and who wasn't, which is why people who feed pigeons in the park, they're not necessarily always being swarmed by pigeons because they've got bread. If they do it every single day, the pigeons in that area will recognize that person as they're going to be bringing food, so they'll gather. I think people assume that you throw some bread and every pigeon in the town just comes anyway, but they will know. There were loads of experiments that showed that. And like I say, even if you change clothes or disappear, they still remember it. There's studies that have shown pigeons can recognise all the letters of our alphabet.
Yes, I saw that. And they're also very, very good. They're on a par with primates when it comes to counting.
Yeah, so they're brilliant with letters and numbers. Yeah. They can even be trained to differentiate between different kinds of art, so they could work out Picasso from like a Monet and things like that, which is again it's just an incredible ability of memory. The pattern recognition, as far as you often see the monkeys doing the pattern recognition, they were doing it to a point where they were outperforming certain AI algorithms. And the one that I thought was a really interesting example was they trained pigeons to identify cancerous tissues.
Yes, I saw that. In that medical images.
And that was one of the examples where they were more accurate than an AI algorithm. So if you fed the AI model a bunch of medical images of some cancerous tissues and some that weren't, it would, I can't remember what the accuracy percentage, but I think the pigeons were something like 80 or 90% accurate at distinguishing the cancer and the non-cancer images. So again, current AI models in that regard can't even beat a pigeon, which is a real test to their cognitive abilities. And then this was a bit of a mind-bending one, but the title of the article was that they can understand space and time. So
the space-time continuum.
Exactly. In 2017, a study essentially showed that captive pigeons, when they were presented with a series of lines on a computer screen for either 2 or 8 seconds, and the experiment was that some lines were short, about 2.3 inches, where other ones were like 4 times longer, and the pigeons were trained to evaluate either the length of the line or how long it was on the screen. And again, they were really accurate. and they found that the more time the line was displayed, the longer in length the pigeon judged it to be, and the reverse was also true. And if the pigeons encountered a long line, they thought that it existed in time for a greater duration, which is where it gets like a bit mind-bendy. Okay. And so the conclusion was, the scientists concluded that pigeons can understand the concept of both time and space, which is essentially an ability that's only really been studied in humans and other primates rather than the wider animal kingdom. They haven't worked out how or what that really necessarily means for a pigeon's ability to navigate life, but it just shows the example of their, I say, cognitive ability, and it's a lot. The pigeon just landed on our roof. Oh. It's a lot higher than I think
they know we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. They're forming a plot now. They're like, they're onto us. They know we're smart, and they're going to go for an uprising. On the cognitive stuff, it all ties into the navigation. We've obviously mentioned homing pigeons, brilliant ability to find their way back home. And they use a variety of things, like the position of the sun, the scent of the air. Apparently they can hear frequencies that are so low.
Yes, I've read that.
That they can hear the sound of waves and even distant volcanic activity.
Oh, okay.
And apparently can detect oncoming storms and things like that because they their ability to hear such low frequencies. But I thought it was important to, or I thought what was interesting is that, like black cabbies, so the cab drivers who have been trained in the knowledge and spent so much of their life training their memory, typically, apparently, cab drivers have a pronounced hippocampus, which is the part of your brain that is associated with navigation. Homing pigeons also have a highly pronounced hippocampus, so they've got that memory part of their brain that's really quite prominent. It just made me laugh there compared to London taxi drivers. But yeah, I mean, they can find their way back to the nest from 1,300 miles away. And I think I mentioned to you one of the interesting experiments is that, so they can detect the Earth's magnetic field. And exactly how they do that isn't...
Is it called magnetoreception?
It is, magnetoreception.
Magnetoreception.
How they do that's not really sure. There's been studies that think it's something to do with their ocular nerve, some that think it's to do with part of in their ear. There's also studies to suggest they have something called biogenic magnetite, which is like an iron thing, like it's a molecule made out of iron, and it's something that, like magnets, detects magnetic field.
I think a lot of migratory birds have that same thing, don't they?
But
they're obviously
the...
using the magnetic north and the magnetic force of the Earth as well to navigate.
One of the ways they realise that, A, they can use the magnetic field, but B, they must use a combination of all these things, the sun, magnetic field, air, to build a visual map, is that if you put magnets on a pigeon and send a homing pigeon home, on a sunny day, it's no problem, they'll find their way home, they'll use the sun. On a cloudy day, if you strap a magnet to a pigeon, they get completely lost, because once the sun goes away, they're going to rely more heavily on the magnetic field. Stick a magnet on them and it ruins their ability to do it. So on a cloudy day, if you strap a magnet to a pigeon, it's going to get lost. Which, part of the fact I worry about the mind of a scientist who decided to do that.
Yeah. Poor pigeon.
It is quite interesting.
Yeah, I also read that they use, again, like a lot of migratory birds, they use landmarks as well.
Yeah.
And they did a study with pigeons where some pigeons didn't use a sort of direct as the crow flies to come back to their loft or their
nest
or their place of, you know, their home that they were going back to. The study actually realised that they were using some of our roadways, like a sat nav. So some of our major roadways, they were following that to
coming off junction six and the
and then bobbing in, you know, left to go home rather than going a direct route.
Yeah, which I think probably makes sense, because so that we did way back on bats. Obviously, bats use the rivers as roads essentially, and they will use our network of rivers as highways. And if you think about our motorway stuff, very similar structurally across the land, there's a big river. So a lot of animals use those channels.
Yeah.
And then what we've done is build a huge network.
Just using a sat nav system.
Now they're just heading up the M40, really, aren't they? But I mean, so many things. We've mentioned their role in history, but they've played a huge role in science as well. I mean, Charles Darwin bred pigeons.
And Charles Darwin, I found that fascinating. He was huge into breeding pigeons.
Yeah, and his experiments on breeding pigeons and looking at the traits that you were able to breed into them played quite a significant role in his theory of evolution.
Yeah.
They always call pigeons, Darwin's other known or lesser known birds, because everyone thinks Darwin's finches, but actually once he left the Galapagos, pigeons were a huge part of his research, which I had no idea.
No,
about.
I had no
Apparently,
idea.
Apparently, he
that.
Never really formed a very affectionate bond with them. Found them interesting, but he had no real love for them, which I thought was a little bit harsh. And then B.F. Skinner, who was a really famous behavioural psychologist, used pigeons in a lot of his iconic experiments to explore learning and conditioning. You think of things like Pavlov's dogs. He did similar things, but with pigeons, where, you know, they peck a certain thing, get a treat, and they remember which one to peck. And so a lot of the experiments that sort of built our foundation knowledge on animal learning came from work with pigeons. So they've played quite a big role in our scientific knowledge.
Yes, and as you were, I think you mentioned a little bit earlier on, they're quite symbolic as well, aren't they, in all sorts of different cultures. I mean, doves, of course, stem back to Noah's Ark. He obviously sent a dove out during the flood. The dove came back with the olive branch.
I felt quite bad because he sent out a raven who came back with nothing, and then he sent out a dove that came back with nothing, and then sent out another dove. So why didn't the raven get two chances?
So obviously in Christianity, the dove's a symbol of the Holy Spirit. Ancient Greece, Greek mythology, doves are a symbol of love and the renewal of life. Ancient Japan, a dove carrying a sword symbolised the end of war. In Islam, doves are respected and favoured in Islam because they're believed to have helped the Prophet Muhammad escape capture.
Picasso used doves as symbols of peace in his art. It's always peace and love, really, with the
Well, that's a nice thing, isn't
pigeons.
It?
Yeah.
So,
but, I mean, like I said, could have gone on for ages. The fundamental point is there are a few myths about pigeons that they're thick. The one we haven't really touched on, I think you mentioned briefly, that people think they're unclean and carry diseases. Actually, a lot of things, even like bird flu, you're more likely to get that from other species. Pigeons are typically quite clean.
There's some really good significance attached to pigeon droppings as well. Did you know
well,
that?
It's lucky, isn't it?
Superstitions surrounding pigeon droppings vary across different regions and communities worldwide. One common belief is that if a person steps into fresh pigeon excrement accidentally, it signifies financial gains and unexpected windfalls heading their way.
I think it's people just trying to find a silver lining for having poo on their shoe.
In some traditions, it's considered auspicious if pigeon droppings fall onto your car or property because it suggests imminent wealth
well,
or business
everybody
opportunities.
Should be getting
in which
wealth,
case, we should all be absolutely
rolling in it.
Some people believe that if a black pigeon leaves a mark on your belongings, it serves as a spiritual shield against malevolent influence.
Oh, I hadn't heard that one.
Due to the mystical properties associated with dark feathers.
That's interesting.
Yeah, which I thought was interesting. So, and of course, again, going back in some time, pigeon droppings were hugely valuable sources of
manure,
fertilizer.
Yeah.
Back in the 16th century, it was very valuable. Commodity.
Shame that's not still true.
So obviously, you know, now in places like Trafalgar Square and a lot of the big cities, it's now been made illegal to feed pigeons because
of the mess.
The cost of clearing up pigeon droppings on Nelson's Column and the famous lions in Trafalgar Square was prohibitively expensive, apparently. So sadly, and there was a big uproar about that, about us not being able to feed the pigeons.
Some
it's
people,
a big thing.
Some people even view it as a hobby. Like you go to the park and you feed the pigeons.
And of course that was prevalent in big cities. Lots of big cities have stopped that now. New York, and because clearing up after pigeons. But again, you know, it's not the pigeons' fault. We brought them in.
And they just love a chip.
And we started feeding them. And so more and more came in because obviously it was an easy meal. And then we gave them a lot of bad press.
Also, we mentioned that the feral pigeon, and although the wood pigeon is the most common one here, the feral pigeon is the one you see in the urban areas. When you think that came from escaped domesticated pigeons that have then bred with
the
native
dove,
one, it's not too surprising that they've done so well with us because they have essentially come from a population that was domesticated. So they have been reared and bred, almost bred to be comfortable around people.
And our buildings and everything are just mimicking the rock dove's original habitat, which would have been rock faces and cliffs and of course...
So, I mean, really, I think, I can't remember which, we did another animal. Have we done an episode on gulls? I don't think we have.
No, we haven't.
But
we've mentioned gulls.
Their ability to do so well is another example of their adaptability, which again is so crucial from an evolutionary point for survival, and another It's the animals that are tied into a tight niche that struggle with change. An animal that can adapt to any environment is always going to do well. So their ability to just, you know, crack on with the changes of habitat and the human development of their land, again, shows quite how capable of an animal they are. And they really just don't deserve the
reputation. I haven't done this research particularly about how many, if you look back on how many lives pigeons have saved down through the ages, that alone, and the heroic things that they've done in wartime, saving lives.
Yeah, and actually,
against all the odds. All right, maybe against their will, I don't know.
It's not an ethical use of an animal.
However, you know, you've got to admire them. Yeah, you really have.
I think also, which really does go underappreciated, is if you look at one closely, they're actually stunning. They are pretty birds.
When I post the story to push our little podcast episode like we always do, I will put a close-up picture that I've taken of a pigeon in the garden. It's absolutely stunningly beautiful.
Especially some of the plumage is absolutely beautiful.
Well, the feral pigeons are such a variety of colours because obviously the breeders... They've got really fancy in breeding different...
I mean, it's called pigeon fanciers, aren't they?
Yeah, pigeon fanciers. And so there's a whole myriad of different coloured plumage, from pure white all the way through to greens and purples and, all sorts.
And I mean, we went on a lot in the turtle dove episode about how stunning a bird turtle doves are as well. The last thing, and I've realised I've stuck this at the end, and this has been typically a very positive episode of here's an animal that has a bit of a poor reputation, yet actually they're fascinating, incredible, and don't deserve that reputation. I don't mean to end it on a less positive note, but we've mentioned the historical exploitation of pigeons, and okay, it's led to some incredible feats of bravery, but I think most people would agree that sending pigeons into an active warfare is not maybe the nicest use of an animal. But it's, I think, important to note that they are still exploited today. We've spoken a lot about pigeons generally, and obviously we've done episodes on turtle doves, which are endangered, but our wood pigeons, feral pigeons, are not endangered and don't need great conservation efforts, but maybe need an ethical campaign effort, because things like pigeon racing is inherently incredibly cruel. And I think that goes with a lot. I mean, horse racing is very cruel. Yeah. Greyhound racing. It's anything where you have to really push an animal and breed them for specific things tends to be cruel. But, I mean, Peter was actually calling for a ban and exposed the fact that there's a famous pigeon race called the South African Million Dollar Race. And on average, 22% of the 5,000 birds entered into the competition survived. So it's only 22% actually make it, on top of the 3,000 or more pigeons that die in training flights just from pure exhaustion, dehydration, as well as being in unfamiliar places, predation, all that. But they are pushed to the point of starving and dehydration. In 2020, only 125 of them made it to the finish line. So to the point where pigeon fanciers actually have a term for this kind of event, and they call it a slaughter race because they know how many of their pigeons are going to die during. So I don't mean to end on a sad note, but it is one of those things that, pigeons are everywhere. I don't think of them needing our help. But there are industries out there that really still exploit them in not very nice ways. And these incredibly intelligent animals, and not to, diminish the exploitation of less intelligent animals, but the higher the intelligent, the more able they are to understand what's going on and, perhaps feel things like pain and suffering. They do get exploited in not very nice ways with things like racing just for our enjoyment. So there are still campaigns out there calling for more ethical treatment.
Yeah, and
pigeons.
I think that's right. It's absolutely right.
I think given their historical bravery and as well as their incredible cognition.
Their long-term association working with us.
Yeah, maybe it's time we retire the pigeon.
Yeah, and ironically, the other thing I found quite ironic is that the wild rock dove, which they all originated from, is actually now a threatened species because obviously they've diluted and diluted and diluted. Yeah. And so they are actually
a
threatened species.
I say there's 13 species that have gone extinct. And what was it? I've got the stat at the top. 59 threatened pigeons. So there are pigeon species out there that do need our help.
Yeah.
And so I didn't want to end on too much of a gloomy note. but just to highlight some of them have
pigeons in our garden, and they do come and trough through my bird feeders. And I leave them, you know, I do let the pigeons feed, but I do shoo them away occasionally so the little birds can come in. But I've seen pigeons in a whole new light, having read all of these incredible feats of bravery.
I do have a stat. You say they come and trough through your food. A wood pigeon's crop can hold as many as 150 acorns, 1,000 grains, or 200 beans.
Yeah, or so two full bird feeders.
They're full of grain, so they can trough and take.
So I'll let them come and have a little feed, and then I'll go, right, guys, that's enough now. Off you go. So, I've seen them in a whole new light, and again, didn't realise and didn't appreciate just how long they've worked alongside us and with us for us. Let's say that.
I always knew that they had a degree of intelligence. I didn't realise quite how far that went.
So this is giving some pigeon love.
Yeah, just hopefully it's dispelled some of the myths.
Yeah,
and hopefully the next time you see a pigeon, which I imagine will be very soon, you can look at it and realise there's actually quite a lot going on behind their eyes. They are possibly planning and plotting.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of three that are poddling around on this roof at the moment. So, do you think they've got the head pressed?
Yeah, I've got to make sure they get their facts right. They better not be saying bad things about us in there. We're going to end up like Chicken Run, but I told you they were organised.
Don't joke. I reckon it'll happen. Okay, so
we'll wrap that up. We'll hopefully you've enjoyed learning about the humble pigeon.
We definitely have.
Or not so humble. Yeah. They've got medals.
They've got medals, which is more than many.
Yeah.
More than most, actually. So.
But normal influencery things. You can find us on Instagram at thebirdiebugpod. Go over and follow. We'll post updates. And we should be posting behind-the-scenes stuff. It's just been a very busy month, but we will have some content coming. And if you're on any podcast platform, please subscribe, like, whatever it lets you do. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.
We will catch you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.